Raj Bali has given us an apology. I just want to introduce what we're going to discuss today. And then we'll discuss whether we're going to meet on Friday. Originally, in the timetable, there was no meeting because Friday was an ordinary session in the morning. That's been cancelled now. So whether you want to meet or not, it's up to you. So we have now reached a new stage in our work. Up to now, we haven't been stretched because since January, we've been having these interactions with our chapter 9 bodies. So it's been very exciting, very interesting, sometimes insightful, uneven in the documentation and in the responses. That's, you can expect that with 11 bodies. And of course, it's up to us now to really establish what's happening really there. So my great Irish friend Oscar Wilde once said, there's only one thing worse than being noticed. It is not being noticed. Now, you see, we've been noticed since January. All the journalists have been here. We're going to move after this to private session. Right? Today, we move to private session only for the last 10 minutes. But from now on, when we're discussing our conclusions and all, it'll have to be a private session. That's on the rules and the constitution. So now, what can we draw? What can we learn from these 11 bodies? We're not 11 bodies. From minister statements, non-governmental organization statements, a whole range of individuals. And I'm going to tell you now that every one of you should have every document brought to the committee. I'll give you a list in a moment because I insist on this being here, of what we have received. Everything was in the library in any case, so in the public domain. If you haven't got it, that means either your secretary or your post box has been raided by somebody else, or this site forgot to post it to you. Maybe I think that first bit that is a mistake. So you should get everything. What do we draw from that? The scores of submissions we had. Well, what we're going to discuss today with your permission is to supplement what was the April date when 5 weeks ago we put on documents identifying, what do you say it was? Key issues there from this document which we circulated. Now I think move on from key issues to, are there any principles that we can work on? So we will look at principles. Can we identify out of this enormous range of bodies? Can we identify some principles there? I've asked therefore Professor out of my permanent and ceaseless respect for the Academy, I've asked Professor Voss to start this idea as to how, are there any principles we can draw from? So it's not in the place, no conclusions. Absolutely none. Secondly, no specific treatment of any particular chapter 9 body. But let's identify and possibly delineate as some principles. So I'm sorry, therefore, others not here. You know, it's a very important session for this. Okay.
Thank you, Professor. Yes, as you say, this is very much a work in progress and a draft is a short notice, so I'm making this input in that way. What I tried to do is I took the terms of reference, I took the constitutional provisions and imperatives, and then I cast my mind back to the 11 bodies that we interviewed and thought, can we distill something from that? And so that is the process through which I tried to come to something. Obviously, the starting point from a constitutional perspective, maybe because I'm a constitutional lawyer, I start there, is the whole notion of independence. Because I think many of the other issues, the solutions that will be found will have to take cognizance of the notion of independence, which is set out in section 181.2, 196.2, 229.2 in the constitution. guaranteeing these bodies independence.
Can I just ask this, because we're clarifying. That's in relation with what identified in Chapter 9.
Yes.
And public service commission.
Yes.
It doesn't say anything about PANSAP as independent.
No, it says financial and fiscal commission, but not
PANSAP. That's the one. And not the out-of-date reference to ICASA, what's it called? Broadcasting.
The broadcasting authority is in Chapter 9, but it is not included in Chapter 9.
That's right, that's what I'm saying. But because the Chapter 9 has the great details of the five bodies, and that's
So there's a distinction, that there are a few distinctions, so that is the first thing that is in the Constitution, but of course, as you said, there are different provisions dealing with different institutions differently. So the bodies mentioned is explicitly in Section 181, and there are extra provisions in the Constitution to say that institutions must be impartial, they must exercise their functions without fear, favor, or prejudice, and then very importantly that other organs of state must assist and protect these institutions to ensure their independence, their impartiality, I'm going to get back to that difference between those, the dignity and the effectiveness. So some of the institutions, and I'm going to revisit that slightly. That's the first issue. Now, if you talk about independence, the second issue to mention is that apart from the fact that the Constitution deals with different bodies differently, the Constitutional Court has also said that when we talk about independence, the actual requirements for independence and the structures to be put in place may and should differ depending on the nature of the body. So if you have a magistrate's court, that requirement for independence doesn't have to be as strict as, say, the Constitutional Court. So the public protector that is dealing with questions of maladministration in the legislature, executive, and so on, might require more stringent protection of its independence than, say, the Financial and Fiscal Commission. I'm making that up, but we can make an argument for that. So there's a difference between those two. Okay, so that is the second issue. Now, if it comes to independence, then the court has set out actually a general test, very handily, what would constitute independence? How would we know it? And there's not one, as I said, there's not one magic bullet that is going to do the trick, but I set out this test, which typical legalese, say, well, we have to ask from the objective standpoint of a reasonable and informed person whether there will be a perception that the institution enjoying all the essential conditions of independence. So bearing in mind the diversity in our society, this means that the perception must be based on all relevant material information. We must ask how things appear to a well-informed, thoughtful, and objective observer, which we assume is a member of parliament, rather than the hypersensitive, cynical, and suspicious person that is a quote.
That's a lawyer.
I was going to say that, yes. So this well-informed person will take the complex social realities in our societies in concert. It will take that into account. So it's not an easy one-size-fits-all. The kind of things that one will take into account is the appointment procedure, which we will see in our terms of reference, security of tenure, which for judges is very important, financial independence, institutional independence, relating to the actual mandate and the execution of the mandate of that body. Very important in the Langeberg municipality case, the court said this means that these institutions, the Chapter 9 institutions, cannot be seen to be part of the government. They are organs of state, yes, but they are institutions that are independent of the government. So they cannot be part of a government department or be treated as if they are part of a government department. When we talk about accountability and so on, that is a very important principle. Then, as I said, Section 181(3), for those bodies that are Chapter 9 bodies, say the organs of state, including the National Assembly, have a duty to ensure the independence, impartiality, dignity, and effectiveness of those bodies. That means, I think, firstly, that we must see that there's a difference here made in the Constitution between independence and impartiality. independence requires something more than just the body being able to act impartially. So it is actually, that means it's quite a strong thing that the Constitution says is independence. Secondly, that the organs of state, including National Assembly, have a duty to ensure the dignity of the Chapter 9 institution. Now, what can that mean? The Constitutional Court has said dignity means that you cannot treat a person or body in a way that it would send a signal that they are not worthy of respect, in a disrespectful manner. So in what the committee does, it will have to make sure that that principle is taken into account. And lastly, I will get back to this, the effectiveness is explicitly set out. I'm going to link that to the terms of reference. More specifically, some of the themes that link specifically to the terms of reference. Terms of reference number F says that reviewing the funding, the model of the institution, including funding derived from transfers and so on. That is one of the terms of reference of the committee. That must be linked to a specific aspect of independence, namely financial independence. Now, I already spoke about that at one of the first meetings when I spoke to the committee, reminding them that in that judgment of Justice Manga in the new National Party case, there was an argument made that it's actually the parliament and not the government or executive that must actually provide for the reasonable and official funding that is sufficient for the body, Chapter 9 bodies, to exercise their mandate. The court in that case, well, Justice Manga at least, accepted that there inevitably will be a tension between the government, parliament on the one side, and the independent institutions on the other, about what is reasonable, but that there's actually a constitutional duty on the parties to resolve that in a reasonable manner. There's a genuine attempt must be made by each party to understand the needs and constraints of the other, and there must be a mutual desire for a conclusion. So in that context, when we discuss funding models, when we discuss the way in which it would be doing these things, in the light of the submissions made by the Treasury, that we have to do that. We have to assume that the bodies are going to engage with one another and fulfill the constitutional duty to do so in a reasonable manner. The technicalities, of course, is different. Secondly, there's the issue of administrative independence, which we have seen when we look at the various bodies. They were treated very differently in terms of the engagement or the involvement of both the executive in the form of the Treasury or the National Assembly in actually the administration. The Constitutional Court has affirmed that bodies can only be independent, the Chapter 9 bodies, if they actually operate independently, which very simply was said they cannot be control over the matters directly connected to the functioning of the Chapter 9 and also Chapter 10 bodies in the Constitution. So any operational control is not going to be tenable from either the executive, from the National Assembly, even though they have an accountability to the National Assembly. So any measures that will remove control over the day-to-day running of the body from these institutions will be problematic, and that we cannot go that way, I would suggest. So, as I said, these institutions at the moment, there are many different legal arrangements which might have to be revisited, because about how staff is appointed, how the bodies actually operate. And as the number C of the terms of reference says that this commission must review the institutional government arrangements to develop a model of internal accountability and efficiency. When it is done, it must be done in a way that is not going to take away control of the day-to-day running of those bodies from those institutions themselves. Another term of reference of the body is to review the appropriateness of the appointment and employment arrangements for commissioners and for the secretariat with a view to enhance consistency, coherence, affordability, and accountability. So there are four things there. which I will link, try and link with the constitution with those that are independent. Consistency, we know at the moment there are a wide array of mechanisms used by the various bodies for appointment. There's no consistency whatsoever. Coherence, it seems to say at the moment, coherence is different from consistency in the sense that coherence requires some logic, some order. At the moment, it's a very ad hoc process, some of the mechanisms for appointment, like the ad hoc committee appointing them. It will be for this committee to decide whether there might not be a need for more coherence. Then there's affordability and accountability. Both issues will also obviously will have to be addressed. I'll get to that when I get to accountability. Now, in this regard, it's important to note that section 193.6 of the Constitution provides for the involvement of civil society in the appointment of Chapter 9 bodies. Now, as I understand it, the Chapter 9 bodies, there's already an involvement of civil society in the form of a nomination process, but this, there is a possibility to enhance that because that will be part of enhancing the independence of these bodies, but it is not, of course, a requirement. It is something that the committee will have to think about, but I'm flagging that at the moment. So in the end, the committee will have to decide whether the various appointment procedures comply with the requirements of independence, as I said out before, but also will have to look at the suitability, will have to look at the coherence, the consistency, accountability, and affordability. The third thing, the very complicated thing, I think, is the requirement that the Chapter 9 bodies specifically must be accountable to the National Assembly. Now, what does that mean? It could mean many different things. Now, I looked at the court report again, and I think I want to suggest that a few things, principles, can be taken from that. The first one is that there is a difference really between accountability and oversight. Not exactly the same thing. Accountability, it suggests there is a hierarchy. One body accounts to the other one, in this case National Assembly is at the top of the hierarchy, and has to come and explain and to justify the actions that they have taken, the money they have spent, whether they have fulfilled the mandate sufficiently. But then the question is, what happens after that? The Corner Report talks about the amendatory accountability, very fancy word, which is amendatory accountability, which means there must be also some sort of mechanism so that when somebody comes and accounts to you and they didn't do anything, there must be reaction, there must be remedial action possible. So the committee, I think one of the most difficult tasks it will have is to decide what to do to have this mandatory accountability without straying into an oversight, general oversight function that mirrors the portfolio committee. And that's trying to manage day-to-day micromanaging institution. As you have seen from many of the bodies, this is going to be difficult because there are really open questions about what happens, what is the role of the National Assembly and the accountability that they have when a body is completely in dereliction of their duty or completely misconstrues their mandate, or if there are internal strife that completely has the body at a position where it's not really fulfilling its function. So, but the important principle is there that the committee, when it does all this work, must make sure that it is not, that they understand that accountability is not going as far as actually having a day-to-day oversight over these bodies, because that would play into, I would argue, the independence of the bodies. So in terms of reference, there's a specific requirement that the committee must look at. There's not possibly a more structured oversight role for the National Assembly in this. So one will have to decide what can such a structured oversight role be, perhaps to ensure that mandatory accountability. Thank you. Lastly, but definitely not least, section 181, 3 of the Constitution talks about the institutions, state institutions like the National Assembly, having to ensure, amongst others, the effectiveness of these institutions. And then Professor Atmal alerted me also to section 237 of the Constitution that states that all constitutional obligations must be performed diligently and without delay. So there's a requirement that the constitutional duties, both by the National Assembly and by these bodies, must be done diligently, without delay. There must be effectiveness. So in both in the Constitution, but then also in the terms of reference, the first terms of reference talks about whether these bodies are suitable for the South African environment, whether the consumption of resources by them is justified in relation to their outputs, and whether rationalization is possible. All of this also really goes to effectiveness. But as I see it, there are really two issues here when we talk about effectiveness and whether they are fulfilling their constitutional duties. The first one is the broad issue of whether the bodies and the work they are doing is still relevant, suitable for our country as we are now. I thought there was a very handy distinction made between the two kind of bodies we're looking at. The one is really human rights bodies. SANSAD, the body with the long name, the Human Rights Commission and the Gender Commission. We must ask, are these bodies doing what is necessary to protect and promote human rights? Is that still relevant? And then the other body, supporting democracy, the Public Service Commission, the Public Protector, and so on, we must ask, are they, the kind of work that they're doing, is it still relevant for us? That's the first issue of effectiveness. Then the second issue is more, as they are organized now, if what they are doing is really effective and relevant for our time, is the way they choose, are they doing this job properly? If not, is it A, because they are not internally well organized, or is it perhaps that they must be amalgamated, or they must be amendments to the Constitution, whatever. I'm not suggesting anything, but you know, we have to look at that. So it's not only internally the effectiveness of the bodies, but it's also the effectiveness in terms of the string of bodies and whether they're achieving, if we agree that the goals they have, that they are setting out to achieve are important, whether they are doing that effectively. And lastly, there's also in our terms of reference requirements that we have to look at these boundary in the ways of improving the coordination of the work between these various institutions. I think that came out in many of our interactions that some of these bodies don't really interact with each other and cooperate in a very effective manner. Now the question is, what can be done about that? Once again, the question will be, do you propose mechanisms that are going to formally require bodies to work together within the limits of what is required of their independence, or are you going to go for a more proactive and a more, maybe more radical approach? And that is about all that I have at this stage. All
right, excellent. The academics usually come 10 minutes late and leave the lecture 5 minutes before the hour. So they usually use 15 minutes, 45 minutes. You have used less than an hour, half an hour. That is, of course, not a term of reference, it's not a principle. But the principle is that the funding formula, which you refer to as a principle, does not violate the basic assumptions, independence. And we have to work out what kind of, because we already have a decision of the new National Party. I've been looking at all these cases, by the way. It's very interesting. The different judgments in the National Party case. The different judgments. We all emphasize one. The Chief Justice is one. We think the others, they come to different conclusions. So we work on that basis. That Justice Langer said that Parliament must fix that. So it's a principle that I've had that the funding system. And I say this because there's one very important submission which you must look at. It's not very accurate, I must tell you. that says, no, the full committee should be doing the funding. They haven't looked at the judgment in the... So they have the new principle that the funding system must enhance, protect the independence of these bodies. And Parliament has to do that as a principle. Okay, well, thank you very much for being here. This does not exhaust all the principles involved. But Mr. van der Merwe, we're just saying that at the end of this long session of 2.5 months, having listened to 11 of these bodies and scores of others and the documentation, what can we draw as general principles from this, which will help us in trying to work out our approach? And I think that Professor de Vos has covered nearly all the grounds I would like to cover. And you're the head of research. Do you have anything to say, Dr. Hayden?
Chair, thank you. I think our colleague has covered the core principles, but we must also take it that these principles don't stand alone, because there's a lot of interaction and interplay between the principles as well. And I think one of the more interesting discussions, I think, that the committee will be having is that around the issue of independence, oversight and accountability, but also juxtaposing that with a possible, is there a question for a collaborative relationship with Parliament and these institutions as an adjunct to the oversight role of Parliament itself? Because that has come up, that these institutions are, in a sense, watchdog bodies as well, and they do exercise some degree of oversight over government departments. And how does Parliament then oversee these bodies, the bodies that are accountable to Parliament, to the National Assembly, and then also a collaborative relationship?
My German assistant tells me today that the word watchdog is not very appropriate. Watchdogs usually bark. They very rarely bite. So but maybe we'll have to change our terminology for more public, workable terminology. You can't say institutes supporting democracy. You know? Nobody can ask. Watchdog, they're not the appropriate. So,
in our subsequent discussions, we'll be drawing these principles out. Is there any reaction, Ms. Johnson, first?
Not at the moment, Chair, thanks.
Dr. Delport,
yeah. Chairperson, I would like to suggest to Professor de Vos to take a somewhat broader view of the whole concept and the term independence. Surely and I've written it out quickly, and I will give it to him for what it's worth. Functionally, that term is actually three facets. The first one, I think, deals with the legal rules that are applicable. That's the Constitution. In other words, does the law allow the body to function independent of outside pressures and influence? Then there's a second one, and that is whether the body itself wants to be independent. In other words, do the persons making up that body distance themselves from outside influences and pressures and judge and go about their work on an independent and objective, in an independent objective way? To take it to the extreme, you can even pose the question, are some of them maybe, shall we call it, agents of outside pressures and influence? And that one has got to do with the independence and quality of the people that are appointed, which is very, very important to my mind. And thirdly then, the other facet is how that body is perceived. Is it perceived to be independent in the public domain? How do people react to, and that's got to do with the, in one respect, with the composition, but also in the, it's determined by their actions. I just want to throw this.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, I wanted to ask some questions of clarification from Professor de Vos, but may I just say that I think what Dr. Delport has just said is very important, and it goes really to, would you agree, does it go to impartiality, which has been described as being a state of mind. It really then goes to the appointment mechanism and making sure that those are appropriate, because you want a fit and proper person in this context is someone capable of impartiality or has proved some of that quality, which is a state of mind. Whereas the independence, as the courts have set it out, and as you've repeated this morning, has to do with the institutional financial. But if Dr. Delport wants to take that further, I would welcome it. I think it is such an important subject. Could I just ask you, and by the way, when we look at appointment, we must, in the same breath, look at the dismissal mechanisms and whether they need elaboration. Could I ask you, on clarification now, when you spoke about the difference between accountability and oversight, were you referring to Section 55 of the Constitution, which says the Parliament must create mechanisms, and then it says it must hold the executive branch to account? Is that what you meant when you said that the justification of a mandate and expenditure and so forth? And whereas oversight is a broader, less stringent, arguably, function. But were you saying, because it wasn't clear to me, were you saying that in respect of the constitutional institutions, in fact what the parliamentary role is oversight rather than holding them to account? Not, because, I mean, that can't be. But strangely enough, if you look at Section 55, it is almost capable of that reading. But quite clearly, we are the people who have to hold these bodies to account and to assist them, as you say. I'll give you an answer. You've shaken your head, but perhaps an answer would be indicated, Chair. And the other thing I just wanted to, I like very much what you set out, and the framework you've given us is the assorted judgment and the wisdom we have now in these 13 years developed on the subject of independence and so forth. But there's a category you discussed where I'm not so sure of your source, if you could just help me. The coherence consistency category. Could you give me the references? Under what heading were you dealing with them, and what judgments were you drawing on?
The
Okay, can I deal with that first? On the first question, you see the Chapter 9 body done in a special position, because in Section 1815, it specifically says that they are accountable to, not to Parliament, to the National Assembly. That you can read with Section 55 of the Constitution, but that means they are in a special position. They are not in the same position as the other bodies that Parliament has an oversight function of. So when I say accountable, I mean that accountability in that sense is not the kind, it's a different kind of accountability that doesn't stray into day-to-day oversight, micromanagement, that one would find in a portfolio committee situation, for example, because it very explicitly qualifies and limits the role of the National Assembly. It's an important role, there's a lot to be done, but it is a limited role. It's not a day-to-day running oversight of these bodies because of the independence required. On the second issue, the term of reference says that the committee must look into the coherence, consistency, and so on of the body. So there's not a legislation, there's not a court case or anything like that. I got it from there, and I thought we're taking the terms of reference seriously, we must try and engage with those. And I just came up with my own ideas of what it might be.
Everything we discuss here is being put in the pot. How it's drawn out, otherwise it becomes a mirage. So, Ms. Budd, can I ask you, what's the relevance of Article 55?
The relevance is nothing direct, but I thought when Professor DeForest drew a distinction between accountability and oversight, because that distinction does exist in Section 55, and I thought that he must be referring to that. It was the subject of much of Hugh Corder's work, but which is a different body of work, of course. And I thought he must be referring to that when he drew the distinction, and just wanted the clarification that was not what was.
Thank you very much. Thank you. Ms. Matsumola, and then Mr. Van der Merwe.
Thank you, Chair. In terms of effectiveness, we have referred to effectiveness linked to financial independence. when we have to look at these bodies effectiveness, I suppose we have got to look at whether they are doing their job properly or not. And that, to me, is much closer to looking at the efficiency of these bodies, which I think it is the role of the Auditor General. So how are we going to do this and ensure that at the same time we don't do what is supposed to be done by the Auditor General?
Okay. It's not an easy question to answer, but I think I try to draw a distinction between two kinds of issues. The one is really an efficiency issue. Is it, are they doing, with the amount of money they have, are they doing enough? That kind of thing. It seems from the terms of reference that that is one of the requirements for this committee to consider. And I don't know how one doesn't stray into the other fields one might work with the wisdom of the other body. But that is one issue. But what I said, there's also a second issue that comes from the terms of reference when it talks about whether these bodies are suitable, but also from section 1815, which explicitly talk about effects, to ask more broadly, is it the kind of work that these bodies do? Is it really important? Is it effective? Is like the four bodies dealing with human rights? Are they really making human rights more visible, promoting it? And so that's a much broader question. Aren't there other ways, perhaps, in which these bodies could work or be organized that will make them more effective? Not internally whether they're spending the money 10% well, but whether they're achieving the bigger goals that the Constitution set out there. So those are the two issues. So in a way, one can say efficiency on the one hand, and then effectiveness on the other hand. I think that will be good terminology.
Thank you, Chairperson. If possible, I'd like to have a copy of Professor De Forest's paper so that one can study it carefully. But then there's one word that gives me a lot of uncertainty, and that's independence. We talk of financial independence, we talk of independent bodies, we also talk of the independent judiciary. But I struggle, for instance, with the independent judiciary. Where is their terrain? The judges. Is it the judge sitting with a case before him is going to give judgment? But then what about the chair he sits on, and the desk, and the pen he has, and his secretary, and the building in which he sits? Where does the Department of Justice or the legislator, where does their terrain end, and where does the independence of the judiciary begin? That is something we are grappling with, and it's the same problem that you have with independence, the terrain. Where, how do you demarcate the terrain of independence, especially with the judiciary?
I think if you look at the Constitutional Court jurisprudence and writing on the notion of independence, independence is not a place or a chair or a building, it's an idea. And it's what Dr. Dalport said is important, in that it's about perception. And what the court has said, what would a reasonable person, reasonably informed, knowing all the facts, knowing our context, would they think this body is independent? For that, some structural procedures or mechanisms is needed. For example, there must be a security of tenure for judges, or there must be a process of funding that is not going to allow the executive to cut off your funding if you make the wrong decision. But then there are also intangible aspects to independence that come from many things, including the perception of the public, how the people really operate. So independence, I'm now giving you a typical lawyer argument, it's an amorphous thing. It's an amorphous thing. So it is not a specific place or anything, it's an idea. And for that idea to come to fruition, certain tangible and certain intangible things should be.
That's more than an idea. It's a separation of powers. That's the answer to it. It's a separation of powers. Partly determined by constitution. Partly determined by a huge amount of political disputing and disputes and all. And mostly, fundamental issue is one arm interfering so much with another arm or sphere so as to affect its operation? That's why in the end. And it's because, there, as Peter said, there are gradations in independence. Not every body has the same degree of independence, right? Because there are different kinds of issues in independence. But the separation of powers, and I'll give you an example. At present, there is a big debate taking place as to whether the judiciary should look after the administration of the courts, for example. Yeah. Well, that's a political debate. The other issue is, should the executive, because the argument is used, should the executive make the rules of court? Now, I've been very interested in the rules of court because the rules of court are more important than the Constitution, frankly. Because it tells you about the process and procedure. It's the interstices of the law, where the facts are. Who should make them? Now, the resolution of that, here it will be political. Ultimately, that's the answer. The Constitutional Court decides. That's the answer. Because if this issue won't be resolved here necessarily, I myself believe that there should be a special body looking at the rules of courts, right? But that's the way it's done everywhere.
No, can't be.
But the courts are a majority. The courts are a majority in the rules of court. But the argument is in use in the proponents of this is the legislative function and the executive function. Well, if it works that way, you can work. How many angels can dance ahead of a pin? Right? So the answer to that is that how can we arrange for the terrain in which the judges work? Right? That's where. How can we arrange for the terrain to be identified, clarified? But yes, sir. So separation of powers. And remember that the Constitution has given a number of judgments on the separation of powers. And a good example is the Civil Union Bill. They said, look, this is unconstitutional, this is the unequal treatment of gays and all. Now, we could have struck that down, the Marriage Act, but we believe it's a function of Parliament to do it. We'll give you 1 year. That's a very good example. The court is reticent about involving itself on that, but in the end, it insists. If you don't do it in 1 year's time, I will still take it.
I cannot let this opportunity to contribute to the confusion. I want to tie up with what my colleague said about independence and impartiality. The old question, who would be the more impartial, independent, a judge in the United States appointed by the by the Republican president or by the by the Democratic who is appointed or elected? Who is the more impartial? The man appointed by the Republicans, by Reagan, or by Hillary Clinton? And that has got to do. That has a very direct bearing on the perception of independence, which is then linked to impartiality. And then on the other hand, you get the situation in Germany, where the judge, even the chief justice, may well become, and that happened, the minister of justice, and who, where the judges and all the magistrates, everybody in the single judiciary that they have, are simply civil servants, and they get promotion, and they're appointed by the state, and they get their promotion.
They're way of independence.
But exactly, and nobody complains about they not being independent, because the perception is that they built up the reputation that the judiciary built up was one, and the state has the reputation not to interfere. So I agree with the chair. The whole concept is not a fixed thing. It's not. It's a thing that will change from place to place and even in time, from time to time.
Why is it causing confusion?
You said no. Each country, each legal system has its own approach. The civil law system is judges are professionals.
You started from law school, you become the judge and the clerk, you go up. Now, it's not entirely true, no dispute. For a long time, the Constitutional Court of Germany was under siege. There were no women for 25 years on the court. That's a political matter. Secondly, the vast majority of them were CDU, the conservative thing, because parties mobilize for election. And for a long time, it's a question of legitimacy, not perception. Is it a legitimate body? So that in France, the highest body could say, Council of State, Conseil d'État, is a politically appointed body. Usually, the Minister of Justice, not the Minister of Interior, when he's put to pasture, he joins the Constitutional Council. Right? That's the normal thing. Normal thing. And the French recognize that in the end, the decisions will be affected by the premises on which the judges were. They know that. And the newspapers and academics will write on that basis that there are still these perceptions. So it's a different system. Our system is the Anglo-Saxon one. Right? And our system, I mean, to answer the question, is that the most powerful Chief Justice was appointed by Eisenhower. Eisenhower appointed this man who was former governor of California, right? And he gave the most extraordinary judgments of the 50s and 60s. Right? And it was a right wing. It turned totally in the Supreme Court. No, that's Canadian. But you know this one, Judge Chief Justice, yeah. Because he was the crucial one on Board of Education, separate but equal. He's the one who persuaded the whole court. And a right-wing man. So they change when they come into this kind of power. Like all of us have changed, really, depending on what you're doing. Yeah, really. So we have different faces. That's the point, right? That's why I don't play golf. Because it brings out the worst in human beings. Yes,
there was this funny story about the previous Minister of Justice in the old South Africa, I think Tel Farouk, because they appointed the judges, and he said the problem with judges are once they're appointed, they think that they are merit and they start thinking for themselves.
I was about to tell you the same story. Of course, there's an original story exactly the same from the United States and here, but that thing happened. Yeah, but is it not useful to say, because I mean all of this is true, it depends on many things, but what our constitutional court has given us in this, as early as the certification judgment, is the indices of independence. Those are the first things that Professor DeFore said out today. The indices of independence, or tests. I forget which word do they use in the certification judgment. It was something like indices, but the word test is frequently used. And they have set out those tests. They are valid to me. They are a useful guideline. I've used them myself often, and they are quite simply what Pierre went through. The appointment mechanism, by implication the dismissal, the tenure, the financial independence, and the institutional dependence, and independence. And that is, I see no reason to depart from those as the basis from which we work.
So right at the beginning, we're not resolving anything here. Mm-hmm. We put everything in the pot. And that we do this between now and next month. Because you made mention there, these indices don't apply automatically to everybody. That's the important thing.
An indicator. This is from an index, okay. Yeah. And we have good judgments too, to be fair.
Yeah. Yeah. They don't apply to everybody. I wanted to take up, Ms. Matsumoto, one point you made, because we're having a dialogue here. You said that, what's not efficacy? Effectiveness. You said efficiency. No. Can't be. It may be one element of that. But the way I would see effectiveness is when we sit down in our portfolio committees and we look at the works of fiction, annual report that we get. Annual report, right? And this is what we're going to do next year. So next year comes, if you have institutional memory, where's the deliverables? That's the effectiveness. Where's the deliverables? So we have to look at the deliverables would be in the Act, the Constitution, and then what we've been doing for the last 2.5 months.
What have they done? Where are the deliverables? So we established one commission. This is quite clear. They left out the one of the most important thing since the foundation, and that is that they must report to international bodies about how our legislation concerning women is consistent with the International Convention on the Status of Women. They left it out, and we established that, right? That's the lack of effectiveness there. There's no delivery on that. So efficiency is one aspect of it. With the delivery of the goods, that's what there's a difference in efficacy also. Right, well, thank you. What else now? We will go, if you finish with this, then we'll go into a short private session. We're all aware of the fact that one of our star performers will be performing at 2 o'clock today. So we're aware of that. That must allow him at 2 o'clock.
Okay.
Sorry, he has an order paper. He's coughing. He's modest, so modest.
Oh,
but he coughs. So we'll give him time to prepare his speech. Have we finished with this? Then we come to the resolution of what we do now. Right? Okay. What we're doing for the press, of the, because you are here, Finns, is that, first, we are meeting on Friday, no?
Well, the other subject we need to discuss is Ethel, because you made a reference from the chair at the last meeting to our putting in Ethel, which came as a surprise to me, but I mean, we need to...
No, we gave you the program. The program was given in December, and we haven't changed it. Tomorrow was supposed to be Parliament, the session. But earlier this week, we found out that because the President can't be here, tomorrow's session is transferred, Friday is transferred to Thursday then. So it's possible for us, and it's because it's committee day too.
We do have French lessons.
French lessons. Okay. Well, what we're going to do now is start working on these principles in relation to these bodies, right? And we start then, and then when we come back on the 2nd of May, which is the first day of Parliament, by the way, we will begin our session by looking at concretely, right, one or other of these bodies, right? By looking at these principles and how they apply, and the term of reference, of course, very important terms of reference. How do they apply? So it's the first day. Now, between now and then, we'll discuss in closed session what will happen then. So thank you very much.
Mr. Chairperson, I just wonder, Professor de Post's principles, Dr. Gabriel also added some salt and pepper. Can we have it all together so that we have a comprehensive plan? Can it be sent to us, please?
Yeah, it'll be sent to you.
Carthy Govinder said, Professor Govinder said, when the Human Rights Commission was with us, it stayed with me, and I wonder if it's just something we may wish to keep in mind, and you may even wish to elevate it to a principle. In respect of our exercise as a whole, and the fact that we have to look at all of these bodies, and even their potential rationalization, he said, perhaps what we should not lose from sight is that we mustn't allow the range of checks and balances to be narrowed. And I found that it stayed with me, and I think it's a very useful touchstone, if you like. Whether that's a principle or not, I don't know, but I think it's worth thinking about.
More worthy thing compared to what Jody Kalapan said in the first meeting in December.
Mm-hmm.
Space. Do you want to give up that space? Space for operation. What we have to decide is the space being used? Nobody wants to abolish space. Now, I think that while they're here, is our commitment is to look at the effectiveness of these bodies in the context of other matters. Effectiveness. That means, therefore, that our report should strengthen the area we're looking at, not necessarily the body. The area. How can we strengthen that area? Now, one area is quite clear as a gap, which we can mention, is freedom of information. Quite clear. Big gap. We have that, very clear. We have resolved how we meet that, either a new commission or some other matter. The other gap is disability.
Where do disabled people go to complain about lack of planning by government departments? 2%. Where do they go where there's discrimination against disabled, which is arbitrary? Where do they go? So they have courts of law. And our job is to provide, as the president said, to provide the opportunity to people pursuing their rights without going to court of law. So there may be two areas now which are gaps. Now, our job is to look at them and say, how do we fill the gap? And then, of course, another issue which we can't look at is, we can look in general sense, is that, could judge from the correspondence I had, and poor Mr. Philander has been looking after too, is people's inability to know where to go to when there's consumer protection, complaints against lawyers. So is there a one-stop place, you see, where they can go to? And usually these are very elderly women. Can't manage it. Yes.
So, you know, you have frequently mentioned this, the people who write to you and so on. You said frequently older, frequently white and so on. But, you know, each time you say that, it's the kind of thing an MP gets. All of us get people coming to us all the time for help with all sorts of things. Some of them are appropriate for an MP to deal with, some are emphatically not. And, it is not my view that we here to create a one-stop shop for the citizenry, but answer right, because you've said it several times, and that's just what it's a matter of clarification.
I don't believe that members of parliament should be messengers. Members of parliament give impression to constituents that they've done a favour by helping them to get their rights, by the way. So all my life I've opposed this idea. In Ireland, when you write to a minister, to get the minister sends you two letters, two replies. One is for the constituents and one for your files. They may not always be the same, by the way. Now, we're not messenger boys. All I'm saying is that there are gaps. Now, I don't think when members of parliament are filling the gaps. It's not our job. Remember, there are 29 bodies altogether, not 11 bodies. That we'll have discussed too, because there are 29 bodies. So, if we've exhausted this part, we will... the other issue while they're here is that the whole of the United Nations, from the beginning, UN Declaration of Human Rights, 1948 onwards, they always talk about indivisibility of human rights. That is why, I think it's a very important principle, that is why we have this huge battle about economic and social rights. Right? The one person said, Judge Davies said, now he supports that. Judge Davies said, these are not rights. The political platforms. He's the biggest proponent of the economic and social rights now. And so that our argument was, no. You can't separate civil and political rights from economic and social rights. Because some of the political rights are social rights. The law says you must have a speedy trial. Well, you have to build more courts. That's a social demand on budgets, isn't it? So there's no separation for civil and political rights and economic social rights. And that is the indivisibility of human rights. Is something that we'll have to address as a distinct. Thank you very much. Yeah.
While you were talking, Ms. Watts, you get complaints from your constituents,
yeah,
or requests, or they want information.
Yeah.
And then the thought just crossed my mind, how many of my members have come to me and asked me, what should I do here? And I think what Parliament should do is issue a document to all members of Parliament, a training document advising them how to deal with these matters, which you can either refer it to the Ministry or to the Department, or to one of those 100 bodies. And we don't all know exactly how to deal, and that could be a form of one-stop service.
Very good. I think Parliament should use it, 700 million for rights and services.
Which we hope, of course, will take up in the work forum.
I would certainly use that.
Thank you very much. But we will use our own interests. Thank you very much. And for your...